Sounds True presents Energy Anatomy, Tape 6, with Carolyn Mace.
On this last tape, I want to begin with the subject of intuition and then take you into how to apply it to self-diagnosis and then how to evaluate illness, how to look at healing. What I've learned in working in the science of intuition is that when I started to do workshops in intuitive training, I was very much aware in my early days that I kept thinking that I had to come up with a formula to teach people how to become intuitive very rapidly, because after all, they were taking a workshop and it's the American way. I paid my money, give me my skill. But what happened was I soon realized that people were coming to me not because they lacked intuition, but because all you are is intuitive and all you needed is a shift in perspective. So first I want to break down the mythology of what intuition is not. And that's that what people generally wanted when they were in my workshops is that they wanted some way of guaranteeing that they could see what decision to make so that it wouldn't cost them money, they wouldn't end up alone, and they would absolutely be safe around the next corner. That was their definition of intuition. Okay? And actually, as I began to work with that, when I would ask questions of my students, I'd say, tell me something. Do you need someone else to tell you that you are absolutely confused about what to do at this moment in your life? And they would say, no. I'd say, well, how do you know you're confused? Because I can feel confused. Well, why don't you understand that that is your intuitive system talking to you? Why don't you understand? That is how your intuition works. Your survival third chakra intuition will always let you know, your gut instinct, whether or not something is right or wrong, good or bad, up or down. You don't have to be a vegetarian to engage that force. You can eat cat food and your third chakra works on target. Some of the best intuitives I know are traders at the Chicago Board of Trade. My brother's one of them. And I can promise you these people are not processing their past lives before they go into the bond pit. They walk down there and they shoot from the hip and they do high voltage trades and they're operating out of third chakra intuition. And they don't make the mistake of considering it a spiritual reward. It is a natural force. What your biggest handicap is what you think intuitive sight should be, which is clear instruction as to what to do so that you will never make a mistake, it will never cost you money, you'll never be alone, you won't hurt, and all will work out. That is the illusion. That is not what intuition is. Intuition is the capacity to evaluate the fact that you aren't happy, or you are happy, or you don't trust someone. You don't need someone else to tell you you don't trust someone. You need the courage to be honest with yourself. Intuition is not the result of oming and aying. It's the result of saying, I can afford to listen to this information. I have the courage to be honest with myself. And then you begin to respond to how you feel. Do I feel like I'm losing power? Do I feel good? Do I feel bad? And what I'm beginning to talk to you about is how to then apply that skill to evaluating whether or not you're losing your power. This is the beginning of self-diagnosis. This is how it works. When you develop rapport with yourself, in which you have a level of honesty, this information speaks to you all the time. Now let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Everyone knows what the feeling is like or the experience is like to say, I knew I should have done this, or I knew I shouldn't have done this. the instant something goes bad or hurts or whatever, you get this immediate flashback. I knew I shouldn't have. I knew something was wrong. I knew it all the time. Remember that feeling. And if I pushed you to go into that feeling and say, go back into that state of consciousness when you were being disturbed by information that was telling you something is wrong, that tells you that you are automatically deeply attuned to that level of information that's intuitive, energetic. The question is, what prevented you in that moment from responding to energetic information? What stopped you? It's your fear of finding out what the information had to say. It's not that you're not intuitive, it's that you're frightened of the information. Start talking to yourself honestly, which is, if you want to clearly learn how to evaluate yourself, you've got to begin with saying, I really want to hear the information. I really want to perceive the information I'm looking at. And from that moment on, you start working from your position that you are energy before matter, that you are an energetic system long before you're a physical system, that energy comes first. Start with that principle. Then move to principle number two, which is every single decision you make, every attitude you have, everything you believe, every memory, everything has an energetic factor to it. Some energetics matter not at all. For example, I like the color blue. That is not a reality that costs me anything. However, if I suddenly have a gorgeous blue couch and you take a knife right in front of me and decide to chop up the pillows because you wanted the feathers, that relationship to the color blue, now it's going to cost me. My energy goes out. You learn to work with evaluating how much energy you have invested in your perception. So as a beginning point on getting to know yourself, walk through your chakras one at a time, and start writing, what is it that I believe that's located in my tribal chakra? What's in my second chakra? What's in my solar plexus? How do I see myself? What do I think of myself? What am I controlled by? Who do I need to control? Make yourself identify those things. Make yourself articulate, what belief patterns do I have? What belief patterns do I have? What fears control me? What fear patterns have authority in my psyche? Make yourself write this down. Why do you want to do that? Because I'll tell you what helps intuitive insight. The more you bring your unconscious mind forward, the more you see clearly. Why? Because what you are literally saying is, I'm not afraid of my shadow anymore. Bring it out. The more you can afford to see, the clearer you see. It's as simple as that. When I think of the mythology around intuitive abilities and how oftentimes I'm asked, were you born this way? I've been asked what kind of diet I have that helps me out. I'm always tempted to say, I'll tell you what enhances intuition, Burger King Whoppers. The point is, intuitive insight is not a gift, it is a skill, and it requires honesty and integrity with yourself first. That's what it is. That is the beginning point. You've got to be able to call the shots clearly with your own life. And number two, work from the fundamental point of view that you are energy before matter. And if anything helped me in developing my own abilities, it was that that is how I grew up. When you are influenced heavily by nuns, in a positive way, I might add, they live in a world of energy before matter. That is their absolute natural reality, where in their world, angels came before human beings, energy comes before matter, thought comes before things. That is the way they lived. And so they always taught you, whether or not you even realized it, to pay more attention to your spirit than your body. It was natural. And that's what I'm asking you to do as a fundamental principle. From now on, you begin to evaluate yourself every day and pay attention to energy flowing through you. So watch. Begin to image that you have these circuits coming through the top of your head, and that the circuits are coming down, and they're filled with prana. They're filled with life force. As they move through your body, they're attached to everything and everyone that you're connected to. Some in very loving, gentle ways. Others out of fear. Others out of resentment. Follow those circuits. And focus on someone right now. Focus on someone that you really resent. Close your eyes. Really get into this. Focus on something or someone you really resent. And literally ask your body to show you where the energy is leaving your body from and attaching to that person. What part of you is leaking energy to that person? See if you can feel it. Feel your electromagnetics go into that of resenting a person that you actually resent, someone who's harmed you, someone you feel betrayed by, someone who may owe you money, someone who's insulted you. Feel your energy go to that person, and then feel what part of your body it's going out of. I can tell you, it is not going out of your ear. It's not going out of your neck. You're going to feel it leaving around your second chakra, around your hips, around your lower back, around your belly button. It'll be this area of your body. Okay? Now, think of a financial situation. Think of a financial investment. Think of something. Think of the fact that you might be afraid of how to pay your bills next. Think of some kind of situation where you are worried about money. Think about someone who owes you money, or someone you owe money to that you can't pay back and that you've lied to about it. I mean, really dress this one up. And now feel, where is your power leaving you in your body when you feel from a financial stress? Once again, I'm going to point out, you won't feel it leaving from your chin. You won't feel it leaving from your left breast. Go directly to your lower back. You can feel the energy leaving from your lower back, from your hip area. Learn to follow the circuits, exactly how your anatomical system is structured from an energetic point of view. Then go into issues of people you want to control, things you want to control. And once again, follow your energy. Who is it you've got a control issue with? Who do you hope calls you? Who do you want to influence? Whose approval do you want? Feel your energy leaving your body and going to that person. And see if you can feel how much energy is going. Does it fatigue you? Does it cause you exhaustion to think about it? Because I'm going to take you just for a moment into what do you think is the cause of something like chronic fatigue syndrome? Let's work illness into this portrait now so that you can see the connection. Where does chronic fatigue syndrome come from? Chronic fatigue is an immune disorder. Your immune system is connected to your first chakra primarily. So when you think of an immune disorder, I want you to go into your first chakra and think your first chakra connects you to how safe you feel in the physical world, how able you feel to protect yourself. Your first chakra is like your moat around a castle. And if you feel safe, if you feel able to handle yourself in a physical situation, your immune system is going to be fairly functional. What weakens your immune system is some version of a first chakra disorder. Either you're going to feel very vulnerable socially, very vulnerable in terms of being able to take care of yourself economically, vulnerable within your family, or you'll be within another tribe, your work tribe. Oftentimes, the profile of someone who gets chronic fatigue syndrome is someone who wants to be all things to all people. And so what happens is they think they can do everything, they think they can be everywhere, and they have this image that they're not allowed to rest or run out of energy. And what's really happening is their energy, so much of their energy is going out through their circuits, they're connecting to more people and more projects than they can energetically afford to be connected to. And so their immune system begins to weaken because they simply haven't got enough energy to run their biology. They're financing people with their energy more than they can, or projects. There are too many places simultaneously. If you imagine that every person or everything you are connected to energetically represents a place where you are simultaneously. And if one day you did an exercise that said, where am I today? And you followed your thoughts, you thought, part of me is wishing I was on the East Coast, part of me is back in London, part of me is with my boyfriend, part of me is here, part of me is there, part of me is in my childhood processing how come I didn't get enough brownies, part of me is wondering about how come I don't have thick, gorgeous hair, part of me is here, part of me is there. And you do a portrait of yourself. As humorous as this might sound, I'm telling you that if you recognize you are in as many places as your emotional energy takes you. Do you see what I'm saying? You're financing all of these places. Remember what the truth of the seventh chakra is. Be here now. Live in the present moment. Every time we distribute ourselves all over the place, it costs us. Chronic fatigue syndrome comes from that. It also has to do with epidemics, in the sense that if you look at why we've become more epidemic prone in our current culture, the first chakra is very much connected to victim consciousness. This is not something I've brought up before, but because I am talking about illness, I'm going to introduce this. Victim consciousness is the archetypal pattern that weakens the immune system, and that has to do with the first chakra. When I look at the illness of AIDS, for example, what I think is trying to happen in terms of human evolution, I think that we've reached a point in our consciousness where we desperately need to evolve beyond victim consciousness. Having said that, I think that within each of our lives, every one of us will face a challenge that makes us face the victim within ourselves, so that we can literally begin that journey of self-empowerment. And if you apply that notion to the global village, you'll see that there is a theme within all cultural responses of victim no more. So whether or not it was the never again mantra that gave birth to Israel following the Holocaust, or whether it is all of the countries that finally stood up and said, we want our freedom back, we want our identity back, we don't want to be victimized anymore. Every single level of life, from dolphins to whatever, are saying no more victim. Now, simultaneously, we have an illness that matches victim consciousness, and that's AIDS. That virus is calibrated most closely to someone who has a sense of victim consciousness. What I mean by this is that epidemic tends to spread within the communities of people that feel most victimized by the world culture. So whether you're in Ethiopia, or whether you're in Romania, where one out of three of the kids is HIV positive, or whether you're in the United States, where the disease is rampant around drug users and prostitutes, people who have the profile of the victim, that virus has to do with victim consciousness, and it influences the immune system because it is a social epidemic. Epidemics are the tribal immune system. Okay, so you begin to see that, what does this mean for you, the individual? This. The more you see yourself as connected to tribal thought forms and tribal fears, like this. You're watching the news and you watch that the Dow Jones Industrial Average just dropped, and then they're talking about, will there be Social Security 5 years from now or 20 years from now, and will society do this? And all of a sudden you realize you are scared down to your very soul. How will this society take care of you? Instead of you saying, well, that can happen, but no matter what happens socially, I'm going to be just fine. I'll find some way things will work out for me, because I'm operating on a different series of guidance. I am not operating on tribal experience, so I will live the exception to the rule. I will not go with tribal experience. So while they may all have to experience the breakdown of society and suffer the consequences of no Social Security, that's not going to happen to me. I'll find some way. But what you've got to do first is recognize whether or not you're plugged into tribal thought forms. And if you're plugged into tribal thought forms, you're plugged into tribal illnesses. You are more susceptible to epidemics, to illnesses. And what other kinds of epidemics are going around? Well, we have an epidemic these days of cancer. Let's go into cancer for a moment. In many ways, cancer can be thought of as the disease of unfinished business, or the disease of incomplete business. Why do I call it the disease of unfinished business? Let's go with evaluating cancer from its negative causes, and then I'm going to take it into its consciousness causes. That may sound a little peculiar, but I want you to have a very neutral and full spectrum understanding of how illness can be developed. An illness can be created because someone is too negative for their biological well-being. Okay? It's as simple as that. And to some extent, it doesn't even matter what kind of negativity. Just trust that if you are overly negative, any negativity can make you sick. Why does negativity make you sick? What happens? All right, picture your circuits coming through the top of your head. And picture yourself attaching a circuit to a negative interpretation of all the experiences of your life, your childhood, your working relationship, your marriage, your divorce, your children, your this, whatever it is, that when the day comes that you are suddenly financing more experiences in your past than in your present, you become susceptible to the development of a malignancy. Let's imagine that every one of your circuits is a dollar, and let's say that you have a memory from childhood that just continues to control you. Let's say you had a, from your point of view, an abusive childhood, and you haven't yet forgiven your mother or your father, and it's with you every day. It gives you permission to be a certain way as an adult, and you keep that memory alive. And if I said to you, okay, how much of your energy is going into that memory every day? And you would say, $30. 30% of your energy, okay. What other negative memories do you have that you're financing? And then you think of a job trauma. You tried again and again and again to do this, that, or the other thing. It didn't work, and so therefore you have stifled your creativity. You're not going to play ball. Things didn't work out the way you wanted. You're not going to try again. You're just going to keep mourning the fact that everything you did try didn't work out the way you wanted. And if I said to you, okay, how much of your energy is going into that? And you said, oh, $30, $35 worth. All right, now we're up to $65 of your energy that you are investing in your past before you're even dressed in the morning. Then I'll say to you, okay, what other attitudes do you have that don't exactly support you? And then you say, well, you know, I know I should exercise, but I don't. So you have a negative response in the way you feel about yourself. So now you've got a negative self-image and negative feelings about yourself. And if I said to you, how much of your energy do you invest in that negativity? And you say, oh, that's 10, 15 bucks a day. So now we're up to what, 65, 75, 80 bucks. And then I'll say, what else you got? And then you have your basic garden variety cluster of fears, common negative attitudes. What you have left over is $6 worth of money to run your present day life, whereas $92, $93 is being used to finance your past. Can you see the problem here? Okay. Not only that, your investment from the past filters into your cell tissue. So now what happens is, at some point, your energy to keep your past alive requires more than the allotment that's coming through you every day. How come? Because every day you add one more day to your history. So at some point, the energy is not enough that you're allotted every day through the circuits. So you begin to take from the reserves in your cell tissue. You begin to take the energy out of your cell tissue to help magnetize your past. When that happens, you run into malignancy. That is where malignancy comes from. Now, when I say negativity, I also want to be very clear here. I'm not just talking about like feeling negative about mommy and daddy. I'm also talking about feelings of guilt that go on endlessly, feelings of the inability to forgive oneself, the inability to forgive another person. I'm talking about burdensome thoughts that literally take the energy from your cell tissue. Those thoughts can cause malignancy. Does that make sense to you? And I want to walk it through one more time so you get how come it works this way. You know, when you have chronic negative thoughts about your own life, like, I should have done this, could have done this, everything would have been better. How many of you have ever had the thought or have the thought that everything in your life would have been or could have been better had you only done this? How prevalent is that thought? In other words, is it something you occasionally think or is it something you really dwell on? Let me look at it this way. When you invest in that thought, what you are actually doing is halting the progression of your own growth. Because you literally are investing in the perception that I have just screwed up my whole life. Nothing will work out from this point on, whatever workout means. And what you do is you begin to live in this time warp that yesterday was somehow filled with opportunities and today's a desert. Now, when you live in that perception, what happens is you can't get the guidance or the, how do I say, synchronistic, miraculous juice that can come in at any given moment. Instead, plug yourself into, there's no such thing as a bad choice. And there isn't. There is no such thing as a bad choice. This is what is truth. What really matters is not the choice you make, but the attitude with which you make the choice you do. There is no such thing as a right or a wrong choice. What matters is the attitude that led you to make the choice you did. Always what's being tested when you are given choices to make is not whether or not you believe in a right or a wrong choice. That is ridiculous. What's being tested is what quality of motivation you go through that causes you to plug your spirit into this one or this one. So imagine you're at a desk one day, you're all by yourself, and you make a decision. And the decision is, you know full well you can get away with not paying a $2,000 debt because you know exactly how screwed up that particular system is. But you by yourself at your desk decide, I can't live with that. Even if I know I can get away with not paying $2,000, I'm going to pay it because I need to do that for myself. You may not have realized that that may just look like mailing it in and no one ever saw it. Everyone in the non-physical world saw it. Do you understand? What mattered is the motivation that you chose, honesty over dishonesty, and that's what opens the door. What matters is what leads you to make the choice you do. That determines the outcome of the choice. The power of what happens in your life is not in the external world of whether or not you move to Boulder, Colorado, or West by God, Virginia. What matters is the motivation with which you decided to move to either place, because that's what determines the quality of life once you get there and drop anchor. And if you can understand that when it comes to making decisions and you want to diagnose, intuitively diagnose the quality of a decision through your third chakra, back to your third chakra, which is exactly where you're going to use. I'm going to get to higher intuition, visionary stuff, but this is practical, day-to-day, ground-level, street intuition. What matters is that if you look externally and say, I don't know, should I go left or right? And you start doing all your research on what's in the left corner and what's in the right corner. Remind yourself to also step back and say, wait a minute. If I look at the left, am I motivated differently than if I look at the right? What is motivating me? And if, for example, you realize, I'm going to take the left path because it's more secure, then fear is motivating you. And you've just signed on for the lesson that there is no such thing as a safe, guaranteed path. You have just chosen chaos, which is why every single time someone says, and I thought it was going to be so secure, I had my lawyers look at it and everything, the bottom drops out. And every time you go the other route, which is this one, I don't know what made me do this. I just had to. I have no reason. The less reason you have, the more it's going to work out better than you ever thought in the whole wide world. Then you're motivated by faith or guidance, even if those two words are never in your head. It doesn't even matter if you speak the words faith or guidance. What counts is the quality of your action and the integrity with which you make the choice you do. So, intuitively diagnosing a decision. From now on, imagine yourself standing in front of the decision. Go into your first, second, and third chakras and feel yourself connecting to it, and what fears it draws out of you, what it causes you to do, how it causes you to think, and whether or not you decide, I think I'm going to stay here because I'm frightened and I'll take the secure path. Remind yourself that the moment you take the secure path, you've signed on for lessons that teach you there is no such thing. The moment you choose the insecure path, the high voltage risk one, you've signed on for instructions in intuitive guidance, because you're going to have to live by the chakra seat of your pants, i.e. your third chakra, gut instinct. I've never seen this before. I need guidance. You get guidance. Returning to the subject of cancer then, I want to look at the fact that there's epidemics of certain types of cancers in our society right now, specifically prostate, breast, colon. Why are there epidemics in those particular types of cancers? I find it so incredibly interesting to watch the medical community always answer these questions, and they'll always answer according to the chakras. They'll give us a first chakra answer, which is environmental. Must be the environment, must be nutrition, must be the environment, must be cars causing breast cancer. Too many airplanes in the sky, that's why we have breast cancer. Right. Okay. Simultaneously, take a look at the fact that the tribal mind has had some very interesting tribal attitudinal shifts that women have plugged into. And the one that is the source of breast cancer is this: I can be all things, and I have no personal needs, and that the perfect image is one of being fully sexual, fully attractive, fully intelligent, fully mothering, fully the cook, fully the woman image, without needing anything for the self. So that the ideal woman is up at 6, breakfast at 6:15 for the kids, the family, works out for 3 hours and goes and manages to make $40,000 to $70,000 a year, shows up at home by 5:30, meets her husband in a sexy gown by 7:30, and hey, doesn't age, doesn't need anything, and manages to clean the house before going to bed. And when someone says to her, "Do you need help?" finds the idea of showing even one form of physical vulnerability an absolute insult. How could you possibly suggest that I would need any kind of help? I can be everywhere. I can nurture all things. I can nurture, nurture, nurture. Where does the nurturing energy come out of vibrationally, the breast tissue? This notion of endless nurturing without any nurturing to the self is one of the causes of breast cancer. Another cause is quite the opposite, and that's that our social energy has now opened the door for women to have choices where they don't want to live a directly nurturing life of a million people in the tribe and everything else. Rather, they want to live more independent lives. And that level of how do I respond without going through the mother archetype or the wife archetype has left a lot of women feeling very isolated and very alone. That is another of the causes of breast cancer. These types of extremes are what I would call the epidemic proportions. In the prostate department, we have an epidemic of prostate cancer. The reason there is because simultaneously our social tribal mind has changed the imagery for men. Men are now free to be motivated to make choices in their life that are not primarily based upon you have to support a family. They are now equally free to say, wait a minute, I think I need to support myself first, and money can't be my major motivator, nor can war, defense. Females are free to make male choices. Males are free to make female choices. And the consequence in these very vulnerable transitional years has been a level of confusion and lack of feeling of success or empowerment tribally within the male and female. And consequently, the place where the cancer has spread as an epidemic is in, of course, the male and female system, the breast tissue, the ovarian tissue, and the prostate glands. That's exactly where it's coming from, okay? Now let me talk about colon cancer, because that's another form of a current epidemic. There's more colon cancer in the last 20, 30, 40 years than there ever has been before. And once again, with all due respect to environmental causes, to chemicals in food and all of that stuff, simultaneously, I think there's been a tremendous increase in the manner in which we conduct ourselves in terms of power and control of each other. Colon cancer has to do with control issues from the second chakra. It has to do with financial issues. It has to do with money issues. It has to do with wanting to control people in your life in the external world. Colon cancer has to do with wanting to have your energy directly involved in someone else's life as a priority. Now, you may be motivated because you think the person needs you, or you may be motivated because you genuinely want to control them for whatever reason. But the majority of times that I've seen colon cancer, it comes from the fact that a person feels like, I simply have to be a part of these people's lives. And what happens is, it costs that person his or her cell tissue. I'm always telling the story of when Reagan got colon cancer, when Gorbachev came to power, but quite frankly, it's very symbolic of the fact that what happened was that Reagan actually perceived his power mate, who was Gorbachev, as suddenly coming into the role of all world attention, was going in a very admirable way to this new hero called Mikhail Gorbachev. And Reagan was filled with the kind of jealousy that makes you hate somebody and makes you want to criticize somebody. That kind of jealousy burns in the second chakra, in the colon. That's where that comes from. That's not always the cause of colon cancer. That is one of them, and that is a very common one. And another one that is very common is breaking the law. Believe it or not, breaking the law continually, whether the law is your word or you're literally breaking the law, is colon cancer. And a third cause that's very common and more honorable, I might add, which is why I want to bring it up, is that oftentimes colon cancer happens when a person has the feeling that they need to move on, but they don't want to. So what they do is they begin to develop the notion that people need them, so they can't move on, they can't move forward. I will also add that I think there's the third cause of cancer that one has to look at, and of any illness, and that's that many times illnesses come about and they have nothing to do with negativity at all. Instead, they have to do with a form of challenges as one grows toward his or her next level of empowerment. And when that happens, you'll always go through the stage of, what did I do negatively to cause this? But when you get past that, you're able to say, wait a minute, this has come to me because I need to go through this experience in order to get my energy into present time and go through an experience of ascension. It's come as a spiritual teacher. That's the third reason and cause for illness. When people enter a spiritual or mystical path, very often as they begin to pray, God, show me a way of clarity, what happens is they become ill. Illness is very often the consequence of entering the first stage of spiritual development. I believe the reason for that is, quite frankly, very mystical. And what's happening is that I believe that you are entering the journey of beginning to learn how sensitive the spirit is to matter versus the other way around, when you were living in a world where your body came first and the spirit was something you read about in a book. Reversing the two, getting to know the sensitivity of your energy system. When you look at an illness such as a cancer, and you look at it from the lens of, this is a spiritual challenge, it causes you to examine how attached you are to the human belief, can it be healed or can it not, versus the divine belief that anything's possible and this is no different than a broken fingernail. Do you see what I'm saying to you? What is given to you is a challenge that would terrify the ordinary tribal mind in order to see whether or not you can make the journey to leave the tribal mind and plug into a different level of truth that says, excuse me, but from where I'm living, this is no different than needing to heal a broken fingernail and anything's possible. It's the journey that helps motivate you out of tribal thinking about what illness is and into the thinking that anything is possible, healing is possible, and illness is nothing more than yet another form of neutral experience.